This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO, at 10, Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll hear an interview with Professor Tom Herschel about new reports that finds 4 out of 5 U.S. adults are struggling with joblessness and near poverty. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein explores how climate change is helping to shape new and more extreme fires across the world, with Dominic Kulikowski, a specialist in wildfires and disturbance ecology. At 11, Ren Green talks to Portland animator Kathy Hart about her films on Native American eugenics and military sexual trauma. And at 11:30, the guest io9.com founder Annalie Newitz about her new book, Scatter, Adapt, and Remember, How Humans Will Survive a Mass Extinction. Thanks, KBOO members, for supporting this community radio station. If you're not a member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Afghanistan. Obama talks withdrawal while over 100,000 U.S. and NATO troops remain alongside an equal number of contractors. While the most intense fighting since 2001 rages out of control. Fleeing Afghans make up the largest refugee asylum-seeking population in the world today. Tune in to Political Perspectives Wednesday morning, July 31st at 9 a.m. Professor Zahair Wahab, returning from 5 months in Kabul training teachers, will join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, to report on the state of the country and the war. Then we'll open up the phone lines for your call. Tune in and call in this Wednesday, July 31st at 9 a.m. for Report from Afghanistan.
I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Thomas Herschel, who is the Director of the Population and Development Program and a Professor of Development Sociology at Cornell University. He's just co-authored a new report at the Associated Press on the widening gap of wealth inequality in the United States, where 4 out of 5 adults are struggling with joblessness and near poverty. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Herschel.
Thanks for inviting me.
And the new study that you have been in, one of the co-authors of, a lot of research has clearly gone into this, but it does really explode the kind of idea that we've had about how American poverty has been gauged in previous sort of official reports, if you will. So tell us about the methodology here and why all of a sudden your report is indicating that everything we thought about this country is wrong, that we've had an extremely exaggerated and glossy idea about the American dream and the lives of the majority of our citizens. Things are, according to your report, a lot worse than they have been portrayed.
Well, what we did, Ian, was we decided we wanted to put time into our analysis. And so we found a data set on 5,000 families that was maintained for 42 years. And so we observed these 5,000 families as they changed over time, had children, the children stayed in the study. And what we found was that when you track people over time like this, you get a very different impression of what their lives are like. Official data from the Census Bureau, now this is a study that's that's housed at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. It's a very, very, very well-done data set, very, very good methodology. But when you look over time, you see that it's typical for Americans to encounter at least 1 year where the family head is unemployed, or where people are in poverty, or where they're relying on a social safety net to get by. And that's surprising because this is not part of the social discourse that we have in the country, where 4 out of 5 Americans are experiencing serious hard times, at least. And, of course, many people get it for more than 1 year. And so, you know, our study kind of encapsulates those kind of statistics.
So the bottom line here is that poverty is not about them, it's about us.
That's correct. That's correct. Poverty is about, poverty is really something that's being driven, I think, by our market society, that, you know, people are maybe doing really well for a few years, things are going well, and then suddenly somebody loses a job or somebody falls off a roof or something happens where someone goes in the hospital in the family, and then people tumble and they have these one or more years of hard times. And I think that as we see the dynamics of the market economy intensifying in the context of, you know, the global crisis, of the financial crisis, and all the things that are going on in the world right now, we really see a need not just for politicians to fix things with policy, but for some kind of new economic system. And I think that economic system really needs to be demanded by the people that are not doing so well. And those are the people that are not really part of the discourse. A lot of the discourse is about people at the top, the celebrities, people making lots of money. That's really what dominates American culture.
But what you've found out in your new study for the Associated Press, Thomas Herschel, is that economic insecurity amongst whites is more pervasive than is shown in the government's poverty data, and it affects more than 76% of white adults by the time they turn 60. Now, what I find extraordinary about that is that, of course, that President Obama has a problem with poor white people in this country. An interesting irony, isn't it, that the president, who just made an impassioned speech this week saying that he's going to dedicate the rest of his term in office to making America work again for working Americans, and that the people in this country that most dislike this president are the ones that are being most affected by poverty and joblessness, even if they don't recognize it.
That is quite an irony, Ian. I think part of that is just what we could call the politics of race, the fact that the president is black, and that there's, especially in the southern region of the United States, we see a lot of manipulation of voting districts and a kind of politics where race and class and sometimes even religion is thrown in. People get divided along certain lines socially, and they're not able to maybe really see the broader picture of what's happening in the country. And I think there's a history of this that goes back, well, you know, to the beginning of the country. And it really hasn't ended. And I think in effect, the Supreme Court is really kind of ramping that up with its discrediting of the enforcement procedures of the Voting Rights Act. That this makes that even more likely to happen, this kind of people seeing the country through a racial lens rather than through the lens of their own experience. And I think it's a very serious situation.
So you know, we have there's the economy and then there's the society. And the president himself, in an interview in Sunday's New York Times, is concerned that the income gap is fraying the U.S. social fabric. He made allusions to racial tensions, etc., in his interview with the New York Times. So they're inextricably bound. In many ways, it would seem that what your report is showing, Thomas Herschel, is that they are a distraction from the economic realities, and that if everybody in this country who's economically disadvantaged woke up and recognized the reality, then they may get politically active in a constructive way. But where is that catalyst going to come from? Are they going to listen to a black president?
Well, I think it's maybe a black president. I think really there needs to be some kind of alternative political party. I think both the Democrat and the Republican Party tend to be more influenced by kind of the winners of the economic game. And I feel like even though Obama is a black president, he's very much, and his rhetoric tends to focus on what he calls the middle class rather than looking at the fact that, you know, our study shows 4 out of 5, they may be members of the middle class part of the time, but they're actually not doing well. They're not members of the middle class for great parts of their lives. So I think that a new kind of discussion is needs to happen in the country that really is based on the reality of people's experience and more common things that they haven't that people have.
But what's happening in America is that the racial and class divides are being stirred up arguably by the same establishment that's stealing the country blind. Meanwhile, yeah. The people, the 80% who are getting shafted, are being distracted by this and not getting together and forming a more perfect union to participate in the American dream that was promised to them.
I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. That's why our book, our title is about chasing the dream, because I don't think that we've really caught up with it yet. I think we're still chasing it, and I think that we can catch it because we are the majority right now. We're 4 out of 5, and I think it's within our grasp, but we have to, so we need to begin communicating in new ways and to begin organizing in new ways to turn the country around, I guess.
So if people can't get your book now, what are the, I guess they can, this is at the Associated Press, this digest of the study, right?
That's right. There is a report which has some of the numbers from one of our chapters at the Associated Press.
Okay. Well, I thank you for joining us. I mean, I think this is some of the most important things. And of course, we know that there's a huge battle over the debt ceiling that's going to be coming up. We'll visit that again. And the president has now finally given up on talking about this complete distraction known as the deficit, and which has always been a ruse to just to cut taxes on the rich. Now at least he's starting to talk about the real economy, the one that you've talked about with 80% of Americans, 4 or 5 living in poverty. Well, I thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Thomas Herschel, the director of the Population Development Program and a professor of development sociology at Cornell University. He has just authored a new report at the Associated Press on the widening gap of wealth inequality in the United States, where 4 out of 5 adults are struggling with joblessness and near poverty.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University, an institution dedicated to serving adult students by bringing a progressive perspective to educating the whole person. Listeners can learn about 23 bachelor's degree programs in the arts, business, and helping professions at the information session on Saturday, August 24th at 9 a.m. Details at merrillhurst.edu.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Fire season is now upon us, and across much of the western United States, wildfires are burning out of control. This morning, as smoke rises from wildfires in central Washington and the Warm Springs Reservation here in Oregon, we talk with Dominic Tulikowski, a specialist in wildfires and disturbance ecology, about how climate change is helping to shape new and more extreme fire regimes across the world. Dominic is an assistant professor of geography at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts, and has co-authored several papers about wildfires, bark beetle outbreaks, and changing climate conditions in the West. Dominic, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, as we've been seeing this year, once again, there's been major fires burning just north of Colorado Springs, destroying hundreds of homes in the cul-de-sacs that sprawl up the slopes of Pikes Peak. And we've seen other places that are really fire-prone having, again, mega fires. And I'm wondering if we could start by talking about whether the fires that we've been seeing in the last few years are, in fact, more extreme than what we've been experiencing, or is it a lot of it perhaps a firestorm that's brewed up by the media.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting and somewhat complex question, because when, for example, we look at the long-term history of the area that has become the state of Colorado, as we look over the past centuries or maybe several thousand years, we see really clear evidence of very large and very severe fires having affected those forests and, in fact, having shaped those ecosystems. It's also true that when we look back into the past like that, all of those major fires have been associated with drought conditions. And so the occurrence of a single large wildfire isn't at all unprecedented. But what is unprecedented is the frequency of these large, severe wildfires that we've been having over the past decade or so.
So what, I guess the obvious answer to that is we are having extreme drought conditions. But let's talk a little bit about what is making this drought different from other droughts that we've experienced, perhaps since the famous droughts of the 1930s.
Sure. Well, when we talk about droughts, we usually talk about a lack of precipitation. But the other factor that's important is also the temperatures, which, of course, contribute to more rapid evaporation of any precipitation that may have fallen. And so what we've been seeing in Colorado and other parts of the West is not only a decrease in precipitation, but increased temperatures, which have contributed to, for example, earlier snowmelt and a longer fire season and much drier conditions than we would have seen in the past.
So how much of this do you think has to do with climate change, and how much of this has to do with other factors that perhaps natural cycles or perhaps some of the development and changes in land use over the last 1,500 years?
Right. Yeah. The answer to that question necessarily depends on